I can imagine the piano sitting there nearly smoking. All right, that's obviously George Gershwin's I Got Rhythm, the arrangement by the great American pianist Earl Wilde. But who's the pianist who was just playing it? Joe, this is your buddy.
So this is Carol Gerstein in live performance, and it's part of a CD that it was my great pleasure and privilege to annotate with an essay called The Gershwin Moment. And that essay was essentially another version of what I've been saying for the past hour in this studio, that it took a long time for us to sufficiently appreciate George Gershwin as a concert composer. And here we have a major Russian-born pianist whose CD contains live performances of both the Concerto in F and Rhapsody in Blue with improvisation. And here, from Berlin, on the phone, is Carol Gerstein. So let's ask Carol, how did you come to Gershwin?
I, of course, heard Gershwin's music growing up. And, you know, in the Soviet Union, actually, Gershwin was quite accepted and recognized as a serious American composer. But maybe also because of my jazz studies, I came to playing Gershwin's music relatively late. I learned the Rhapsody, I think, around 2006 or so, and the Concerto around 2012. So I started playing his music a bit later, but of course, with my classical repertoire experience and my jazz studies, it felt so like something quite homey in the sense of the idiom.
So, Carol, certainly one of the most unusual features of this CD is that you've improvised a cadenza in the middle of the second movement of the Concerto in F. Why don't we listen to it first, and then I'll ask you to talk about it. So what you just heard is Carol Gerstein improvising in live performance a cadenza in the middle movement of the Concerto in F. So Carol, who's on the phone from Berlin, will now tell us, why did you do that and how did you go about it?
I feel that Gershwin's music asks for a precarious balance between what's written on the page and what one infers from the page. And while I'm not quite a fan of very extensive additions to Gershwin's pieces, as some jazz pianists have done, I find that to play strictly what's on the page is perhaps ignoring a bit what the language and the idiom of the music suggests. And so there are a few places that one can hear in the recording where, in the concerto and the Rhapsody in Blue, I add some improvised moments, and to me they seem to suggest at that particular moment, also structurally within the piece, that possibly there is an opening for an improvised cadenza of some kind. But it is always a balance I try to be aware of when I play. How much can one, or how much should one, add before it risks tipping the balance? The question of what might fit is of course a worrying one. I didn't think of period accuracy. In fact, also in some moments in the concerto and then the Rhapsody, I think not in the improvised bits, but I find that the eighth notes suggest a certain swing or a hint of a swing-like feel. And I think there could be an argument made, well, in 1924, they weren't swinging the eighth notes. They were swinging the eighth notes in 1929. And I'm not trying to be accurate in that sense. Not that I think it's also possible, but I think the fact that the music suggests and hints at many things that have since then implanted themselves in our ear is something that influences very much. So essentially, it's a by-ear process also of what one improvises any time, including what I improvise in the concerto and in the Rhapsody. But there's some inside jokes planted. There's the quotes from a couple of popular songs that one can discern, which are so period appropriate. And there's a modulation in the concerto cadenza that I improvised that was a bit of an inside joke between David Roberts and I, because it's very similar to the slow movement of the Grieg piano concerto. And I think Grieg and Rachmaninoff, together with Tchaikovsky, are some of Gershwin's classical models when he sets out to write the concerto in F. So there's a bit of that. And, you know, like always, I think in playing written out music and in playing improvised stuff, it says just as much about the person that plays than, you know, than about the composer. So I try to, of course, not be jarring to what Gershwin would possibly have played. But, of course, it's also my ear and my inclinations that come out.
So before we hear Kirill Gerstein in this live performance of the second movement of the Concerto in F by George Gershwin, Kirill, could you tell us about the concerto in your estimation? You're somebody who plays a lot of piano concertos. Probably this is the only one by an American. How does it stand up?
I think Gershwin's Concerto in F is a very unique piece in its blend of classical and jazz. I admire it also for incredible progress that Gershwin makes compositionally from the Rhapsody to the concerto. The orchestration is absolutely striking. I think we know that a number of so-called classical composers also were very much admiring the orchestration. And I think the precision of the piece that's often so underrated is very Stravinsky-like. So I think, again, like many other Gershwin's compositions, but I think the Concerto in F is quite particular in this, his ability to synthesize all these different influences, you know, from his fascination with Alban Berg to his knowledge of Stravinsky to absorbing the piano textures and ways of writing for the piano from Liszt and Tchaikovsky and Rachmaninoff. And at the same time, you know, there are his sort of Yiddish influences and, of course, Tin Pan Alley and blues and jazz. So that sounds like a very eclectic list that I've just gone through. But the fact is that then he's able to make it into something organic and something that is uniquely and recognizably Gershwin. And I think first and foremost, this ability to make this new and original sound out of all these elements is something that a number of great composers, not all great composers, possess. And therefore, I think this places this concerto and Gershwin as its author in line with the big concertos in our repertoire. But if it's, of course, very special because I think finally it may be the foremost example of succeeding in making this blend primarily of so-called classical and American jazz idioms.
Well, Kirill, thanks so much for staying up late there in Berlin to talk with us. We're here in New York, and there's about a 6 or 7 hour time difference. And now I'd love to hear your new recording from the Gershwin Moment. That's the name of the whole album. You're playing the entire concerto in F of George Gershwin with the St. Louis Symphony under David Robertson. Let's listen to that whole second movement, which we were just talking about. Here's Kirill Gerstein. That second movement stands as a beautiful set piece on its own. Music of George Gershwin, the second movement of the Concerto in F. That was the marvelous pianist Kirill Gershtein performing with the St. Louis Symphony under David Robertson. I want to give a shout out to that fantastic trumpet player, Thomas Drake. When you hear trumpet playing like that, you want to look at the trumpet player and say, hey man, does your mama know you played a trumpet like that in public? It was wonderful, wonderful bluesy feeling. And now we get to hear the final movement of the Gershwin Concerto with yet another of your wonderful discoveries. Tell us about this wonderful, I'm tempted to say Russian, but he's actually a Georgian pianist, isn't he?
We're fudging the word Russian. This is Vakhtang Kodanishvili, like Gennady Zagor, a former member of the Taradze Piano Studio. Mm-hmm. He is indeed Georgian, and we're returning to the post-classical ensemble concert that we earlier auditioned. The first half was Rhapsody in Blue with Gennady Zagor. The second half included the Concerto in F with Vakhtang Kodanishvili, and we're going to hear the finale of the Concerto in F from that performance.
Thank you.
Wow, what a terrific performance. The pianist Vakhtan Kodanishvili, young Georgian pianist and post-classical ensemble under Angel Gil Ordóñez.
So Vakho, like Gennady, was a member of the Taraza Piano Studio, and both of these guys were invited by Valery Gergiev to do these pieces in St. Petersburg as a result of this concert that we've been listening to.
Wow.
Kodanishvili played the concerto in F with the Marinsky Theater Orchestra, and Zagor played Rhapsody in Blue. Gergiev didn't conduct, but they did perform with his orchestra in St. Petersburg as a sequel to the performances that we've been listening to.
You mentioned that when Alexander Taraza made his way to the U.S., his managers in the U.S. advised him not to take on the Gershwin concerto. Does right. he play any Gershwin repertoire?
Taraza?
Yeah.
Not a note.
Really? But his pupils, or at least his followers in a way, do. They command.
Well, yes, they are his pupils. They were his pupils. So we finished this concert with the Cuban Overture, which has never really entered the repertoire. I'm going to let Angel talk about that.
I love this piece. I'm especially in love with the middle section, the slow section. It sounds to me profoundly Spanish. My guess is that Gershwin knew the music of Albéniz en Granados. Most probably. I mean, of course, the piece is basically Cuban. It's, the inspiration is the Cuban rhythms, etc. But why this middle section sounds so Spanish? Of course, it sounds also, there is a blues part in it. There is a beautiful prelude to the middle section with a clarinet. There's a clarinet solo, and it's already announced in this Andalusian, almost Andalusian cadence. So we don't know really if he was looking for inspiration, Gershwin, when he went to Havana, as people say, or he was just having a vacation. But the reality is that on his own words, he says, I spent two hysterical weeks in Havana where no sleep was had. That's already, I mean, he had an extraordinary good time there. He was fascinated by the sound, how the orchestras, with the most show of easiness, would play the most complicated rhythms, as if it was just, you know, the easiest thing to do. He listened to bands, a very famous Spaniard that was in Cuba and making a big success in the Americas, Xavier Cugat.
Oh, sure.
Born in, I'm not sure if Barcelona, I mean, from the Catalonian region. So the pieces of basically Cuban, as I said. It was called first a rumba before being named the Cuban Overture. Of course, he was fascinated by the use of the percussion instruments. He brought some of these Cuban instruments to the United States. As Joe said, this piece, I mean, every time I have the opportunity of including the piece as a guest conductor, I include it. And I think it's a masterpiece.
I can't wait to hear it. What's the length of it?
It's about, let's say, 10, 11 minutes.
We should add that the first performance at Lewiston Stadium was conducted by Albert Coates, born in St. Petersburg, studied composition with Rimsky-Korsakov.
I always think of Coates as an English conductor, wasn't he? Did he spend a lot of time in England?
His parents were English, but he was born and raised in Russia, and he specialized in Russian repertoire. And I, of course, mentioned that because of our theme, the Russian Gershwin, which even applies to the Cuban Overture.
Great. Let's listen. Here is Maestro Angel Gil Ordóñez conducting Post-Classical Ensemble, Cuban Overture of George Gershwin.
Thank you.
Performance. I love that piece. I've never heard it before. My word. I thought it was just American in Paris. I wish George Gershwin had gone a lot more places and written these wonderful recollections. This is the Cuban Overture.
Isn't it fantastic?
Yeah.
So let's ask ourselves the obvious question. How is it possible that we don't know this piece?
You know, it sits at the end of a catalog. I mean, there are wonderful books I used to consult all the time as a conductor when you're making programs.
1932.
It sits down there. Yeah. And it looks like one of those lumpy pieces that everybody, sort of characteristic pieces. It's very easy to write a kind of Latin-sounding piece for a gringo composer. Yeah. And you think, it's probably one of those. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I would have heard of it. I don't know why. Anyway, this is a wonderful recording.
Let's try and answer this question. What occurs to me, listening to it at this moment, is that the middle section is a pretty high compositional achievement.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It confutes the notion that Gershwin isn't a real composer.
There you are. Mm.
So if that's the prevailing notion,
I know.
People wouldn't know what the hell to make of this this passage.
Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting piece. It's a three-part piece. It's exactly. ABA. And that big, wonderful, intelligent, deeply probing piece. That, for me, sounds like Imperial Spain. The rest of it sounds like Island Rhythms, which is wonderful because he's got such a great ear. And he loves all the, you know, boom, 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 all the percussion instruments. But that stuff in the center, some of the counterpoint, it's astonishing.
The counterpoint's amazing.
That could have come from, I don't know, Ravel or somebody around that period. Yep.
And it's quite original.
Yep. Completely.
So we have to grapple with this. You're tired of me beating up Aaron Copland. This is a better piece than El Salón México in many respects.
Right.
You've conducted these pieces. Don't you agree with me? I mean this is a better piece than Salón México.
Okay, let's make a better straw man for Copland. Let's take Latin American Sketches. This is an infinitely better piece than Copland's Latin American Sketches. And when I talked about these pieces that sit down at the bottom of this little pile called gringos writing Latin music, that's what I was thinking of. This piece is fantastic. Cuban Overture, exactly.
Let's go right back to this forbidden topic of Copland. The Copland Salón México is synthetic. This doesn't feel synthetic.
No, it's not.
You're Hispanic. I mean, you're the person to talk about this.
Yeah.
What's the difference between Copland appropriating Mexican music and Gershwin appropriating Cuban and Hispanic music?
Well, this is, to me, the real appropriation. Actually, he actually says, when asked about this piece, what he wants is precisely to take this experience, this very natural and popular and talented skills of the Cubans and bring it to a higher level.
Mm-hmm. Don't say that.
Yes.
A higher level?
Well,
would never have said that. That's the whole nub of this. That's what Copland is doing. He feels that something that's in the vernacular has to be fixed, or at least it has to be improved. You have to turn it upside down, play it backwards. Whereas Gershwin is comfortable with the vernacular, he doesn't feel the need to improve it or fix it.
This is verging on the political correctness. I think we got to get back just to musical correctness. And you know what? I like El Salón México, and I like very much this new, wonderful piece you've showed me. I'm glad we have them both.
I'm smiling at you, Bill.
Well, I had to stick up a little. Come on.
So we'll let these sleeping dogs lie and return to the Russian Gershwin and round out the show with some more Heifetz. Having heard Ruby Elsie sing My Man's Gone Now, we can now hear Yasha Heifetz play it.
You've been listening to Post Classical with Joseph Horowitz and Angel Gil Ordóñez. I'm Bill McLaughlin. Post Classical is an exclusive production of the award-winning Classical Network and WWFM.org.
The next Post Classical will come your way in August, and an extended version with added material of this broadcast can be found on our website, WWFM.org, as a webcast. Our recording engineer in New York, Bill Zygmunt of Digital Island Studios. Check them out at digital-island-studios.com. Post Classical is an exclusive production of the award-winning Classical Network and WWFM.org.